You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 18th, 2011. This is episode 184, Apple Day. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your regular host, along with Sally Draper, and we are having an Apple show, an Apple party, let's say, Sally, today.
An Apple party, that's right. We had to make a lot more room at the podcasting table today because we have some special guests.
Yeah, we got out the construction tools, and we've blown out the walls. We've added some audio and video equipment, and we've invited some... I don't know how Apple folks feel about the moniker Apple fanboys. Maybe we could ask Aaron and Bob how they feel about that. But that's how I would. I can't speak for Bob. I can speak for my son Aaron. But I do think he's an Apple fanboy, and maybe they wear that tag with pride. Joining us is my son Aaron Spriggs.
Hello.
How are you, Aaron?
I'm good.
And I look forward to these opportunities because we don't talk a lot anymore. You're pretty busy with finals and going to school and getting your degree and all that stuff. So we've got an hour of time we can chat with each other and catch up on how things are going. So thanks for joining us, Aaron. And we also have Bob Martins, who is formerly of Wisconsin and now back in Minnesota. Right, Bob?
Yeah, just spent I consider it my 4-month sabbatical working in Milwaukee for Apple, and then I'm back actually at Martin Luther College here in New Ulm. So,
now you were you an MLC grad? Is that right?
Yes, okay. I was. I graduated in 2009 with my education degree, and actually, I grew up in New Ulm. My parents own a farm right outside of town here, so
I know
the city rather well. At least I can find my way around and not get lost too often, so it's good.
Right. So you're in Sally's country out there.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Or Sally's in my country. We can consider
that's
we can go either way.
We want to do that, exactly. Yeah. We'll take it whatever way we can get it. But we're really happy that both of you decided to join us. And when Sally and I were kind of brainstorming for this show, we thought, well, it would be nice to get people actually live and breathe the Apple stuff. Sally and I do a little bit. Maybe a quick survey of Apple products around the table here. And I own an iPhone, of course, and I think three of the four of us do on the show. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I know Aaron does. I don't know. Bob, do you have an iPhone?
I do. I still have my iPhone 3GS. So.
Okay. I have a MacBook Air and an iPad, and I guess I should throw in the Apple TV as well. Sally, what's on your Apple playlist?
On my Apple playlist, I have an iPod Touch, faithful iPod Touch I've had for 2 years that I've enjoyed thoroughly, but I just graduated last week to an iPad 2. I'm so psyched.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she was proudly showing it off. I was out there for call services, and she ran up to me with her iPad 2 with its, was it a purple shell?
It's kind of blue, royal blue, but it's inscribed on the back.
That's
you have
right.
the option if you order it online. So I had a real debate over what to put on the back of my iPad. It says, you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain.
Beautiful.
1 Corinthians 15:58 went on the back of my iPad.
Nice. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So she was showing me all her apps, and she was like a little kid in a candy store, I could really say that.
I even took your picture, Martin, so you guys have to check out the show notes.
That's right.
We have photos of Martin from my iPad on there.
That's right. So, Bob, what kind of Apple gear do you have?
I have a 13-inch MacBook Pro that I just got about a month ago. And
nice.
That's my main work machine. Then I own the iPhone 3GS as my main phone. And a first-generation iPad that I have up with my notes right now, actually.
Uh-huh.
And then at home, we're an Apple family. So my wife has a white MacBook from 2009 and an iPhone 3G. And then we have an Apple TV as well, which we use for streaming Barney and Thomas and all those things for our
Sweet.
Son. That's mainly
like
what
it.
It's used for.
Yeah. My wife, too, has one of the white MacBooks as well. Aaron, what have you got in your bag of Apple tricks?
I actually don't have too much. Of course, I'm looking to expand always. But I have an iPhone 4 that I'm actually currently Skyping from because my internet is down. So it's
nice.
Working pretty well. I've got a black MacBook, about 4 years old right now, mm-hmm. and an Apple TV, one of the new generation ones.
Nice. And then you spend a lot of your time with Apple products because you work in the Mayfair Mall Apple store, right? Aaron?
That is true.
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Bob, you also worked for Apple. You know, you are no longer a card-carrying Apple employee, but you spent some time in the sister store here in Milwaukee, Bayshore, right? Oh, I lost Bob. Hang on just a minute here.
Yeah, it sounded like his connection was dropping out.
Let's see here. I can edit this long pause out. Oh, there he goes.
My 3G is holding up surprisingly
no
well.
No kidding. It's that New Ulm telecom out there.
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty bad.
Somebody's biased against this neck of the woods.
Okay, we've got Bob back, and let's jump into some Apple talk. And what we thought would be beneficial to our listeners, whether you're Apple folks or not, I think it's something that is coming to schools and churches near you that we're going to see, I think, a lot more Apple products, you know, within the church office, certainly within the classroom. And we thought maybe we'd break down our conversation into some bite-sized categories. And maybe the best place to start would be, let's maybe talk about the mobile side of Apple. That seems to be where they're spending a lot of time, whether it be iPhone, iPod, Touch, iPad, those are all obviously very key products in the Apple ecosystem. What are our thoughts on handhelds or those kinds of mobile devices? Let's say maybe in the educational space first off. What are you guys seeing? What are you thinking as far as how maybe teachers and kids are using these things? Or Sally, for that matter.
I think for the most part, it's another, you know, very personalized, very accessible communication device, and in a world where people are more scrutinized and everything as far as education goes, it's beneficial to have contact with parents and with other teachers, both during the day and then outside as well, if you have questions. And something like an iPhone, I'm thinking specifically right now.
Mm-hmm.
Allows you to always have that with you if there's ever a question about, say, a project or an assignment that comes up.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, when you see kids, or when you see, do you see, maybe is a better question, do you see parents and kids coming into the Apple store looking for some of these products for the kids and for educational purposes?
iPod touches mainly.
iPod touches, yeah.
Pretty much what I'm seeing now is iPads. The iPad really the huge thing, even like public schools, all of them are, a lot of them in the Milwaukee area are purchasing iPads for their kids to use instead of MacBooks now even.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I was actually talking to a high schooler the other day, said to Rufus King, I said he takes all of his notes on an iPad in class, in high school, and he's a freshman. And I was just kind of blown away by
it. No kidding.
Considering that we barely had cell phones when I went to high school, and it's now to the point where they give out their notes digitally. They have like D2L, Desire to Learn services, and all that sort of stuff built in to all of their programs. Now it's a very crucial key. That's what it seems like.
And even when I was in high school, we had our phones confiscated from us when we got on the campus.
Right.
So wasn't even the idea of using an electronic device to actually become an integrated part of your learning environment is relatively new.
Absolutely.
Many ways of thinking.
Prepping for the show, Bob shared one blog that I wasn't aware of. It's by Fraser Spears, who's apparently a teacher in the UK, maybe, Bob? I'm not sure, but he's got
in that area.
Mm-hmm. One-to-one initiative going on in his classroom. And the top article written last week talked about a sub 1-to-1 iPad usage. And his point was that the iPad is a very personal device, just like Bob said to start with, that it's not something that you just put on a cart and hand out an iPad to kids 1 hour a day. And his model was more like assign it to a class for 6 to 8 weeks. If you need to share them, let them live with it full time, because it's more of a personal device, something that they're going to personalize for their own usage and not real great at being a shared device. So I thought that was interesting perspective.
And one of the things that I think is appealing about a platform like the iPad is that it is somewhat structured and controlled to the degree that anybody can really click, you know, or tap a button, and the well-done applications can essentially guide you through the experience. You know, so with a like a regular computer, you know, the sky's the limit. You got all kinds of stuff, and you need documentation and instruction manuals and step-by-steps and tutorials. And it seems to me that well-done iPad apps and iPod Touch and, you know, iPhone apps really are self-explanatory. They're intuitive.
Yeah, and even things like with iOS and where it is at right now, there's the iOS launcher where anybody who has any inkling to make even a web app can set that as a profile to 50, 100 iPads and send them out all at once wirelessly and just really kind of control that inside of especially like a school environment where you need wireless turned off or you need or like 3G turned off. Safari turned off and you just want access to 4 applications. Like,
yeah, I wasn't aware of that when I met with your folks over there at the Apple Store as we're trying to maybe think about getting Apple into the Shop Wells program. That was one thing that that they showed me there is that iOS or launcher where you can totally lock down the environment. So if you truly want to have a, you know, kind of a one-to-one initiative, you can make it a safe experience for the users. I think that's probably a big win to get these things into the classroom and speaks well.
And I think another thing is you can even go younger too. I mean, I have a 2-year-old son who is perfectly comfortable tooling around on our iPad. Probably not by our design necessarily, but when it's at that height, he gets everything that's there.
Right, right.
Watching him work with that, and then seeing him pick up a mouse and try and chew on it, it's a different experience, and it is to an extent more tactile because you are pointing at things, and the device then becomes whatever application it is. So whether he's reading Elmo or trying to match the name of a cow to the picture, mm-hmm. You know, it becomes that, and there's no superfluous things for him to actually get distracted by,
right,
or to accidentally click on to make him as frustrated. It's a unique device, and this isn't just about the iPad necessarily, but the whole realm of tablets that are now seemingly coming out of the ground like zombies, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're all predicated around the idea, more or less, that you poke at things and you touch things and the device becomes whatever it is that you've just explicitly touched. And that's a powerful, I think, paradigm, but also really different from what we're used to and what we grew up with as far as the keyboard and mouse, graphical user interface,
right,
with the X in the right-hand corner.
Very structured,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, right. Menus are along the top and very... Everything kind of fit within that paradigm, Windows and the graphical user interface type of thing, not Windows as in the operating system.
Right.
So this is a huge cognitive shift for people like me who is used to that.
Mm-hmm.
But for those growing up, I think it'll become more of a just, this is another option we have, and it'll become a little bit more natural feeling to them sooner.
Well, I think it promotes, again, it is a paradigm shift, and I think that it promotes more of a discovery approach to an application where mm-hmm. you kick the tires, you try this, you try that. You're not afraid to do that within the confines of the app. I think of an app like I don't know if you guys reviewed the Daily that came out from mm-hmm. Rupert Murdoch's mm-hmm. group that was truly interactive. I don't think it's doing real well, but I think the concept suggests kind of different ways of sharing the news, where you got video, you got interactivity, you got polls, you have all kinds of things you can touch and feel, and I think that seems to be a more natural fit than kind of this step-by-step structured, this is how you must do it this exploration, this discovery type of model. So, good.
You know, Bob, you mentioned tablets just kind of going that direction, but I'm excited reading about the Mac OS X Lion operating system where it's built the power of Mac OS X, the magic of an iPad. So on a laptop, you'll get that same kind of interactivity as the iPad look and feel. So exciting to see that coming. I guess this summer is the launch date for that.
That's what we keep hearing, except I don't think Aaron can say anything about that.
Aaron usually tells me either, he doesn't know, and I guess I believe him.
I remember that.
I know nothing.
Let's move on to a little different area. Content creation, which is obviously something that computers are useful for, and certainly within education or within the church office too. And two of the apps that come to my mind, one of them is GarageBand, which now has kind of made its way into a more useful format on the iPad, but certainly on the Mac platform, an application that has a lot of different uses.
Yeah, I would like to try out the one on the iPad because I hear from people that it's absolutely phenomenal. And some of them do full podcasts and they record it straight to their iPad and edit and everything, which is really cool. GarageBand brings a lot of sound editing like down a notch or two, I guess, mm-hmm. if you think about it. And while it doesn't provide all of the pro things that someone who is an engineer might want, it does provide you an easy way to kind of edit clips down. And like you mentioned, for churches and schools and stuff, I mean, putting together promo videos or just splicing together sound bites for a promotional video or for, we just in this past church had an update from our pastor on the finances. Hmm. Something like that is really simple to do within GarageBand because it's all in the interface and in the graphical interface, and you can drag it and stuff. I mean, that's really cool. And I think moving into the iPad is kind of cool, too, because then you get the tactile feel of using your fingers and your hands to actually manipulate mm-hmm. sound. And that's kind of a cool thing to think about, manipulating sound with your hands or your fingers. That's kind of a cool thing. It's like most tools, that there's a right tool for the job and a wrong tool.
Right.
I think GarageBand can do a lot of stuff up to a certain point, and it's putting the time into learning. It can be really powerful to what it can do.
Yeah, for sure. GarageBand is actually probably one of my favorite Mac applications just on how useful it is out of the box. It's even more powerful than some programs like Audacity, where it's got actual music creation tools built in, and the iPad version is just that much better with full drum kits and guitars and all sorts of stuff with that multi-track mixing on the iPad too. It's just phenomenal. Like even taking a project like that, exporting it out to iMovie, putting that along with some video that you've taken, whether it be from your iPhone imported in or from the iPad 2 itself, and then putting that, let's say, into a keynote presentation, and then with the iPad 2 you can put it right up on a projector. Like it is becoming more of a solo platform than it ever has been.
Right.
Makes me think about business travelers who've been lugging around laptops and carrying, all that weight on their back all this time, that they're going to be a lot more prone to have an iPad in their pocket and do all of their work that way.
Let's maybe jump a little bit onto the enterprise side and talk about how Apple products might play a part in kind of infrastructure for church and school networks and server and storage and those kinds of things. Now, I've got a Mac Mini at home, which I use as a media server, but my understanding is with the next release of Lion, anything can really be a server. So is there a play here for Apple in that kind of space, maybe the small office or medium-sized office or school network, that it could serve as, kind of a network server, that kind of thing?
I can't go ahead. Sorry, I was here myself. I can't speak for Aaron, but I remember selling a lot of Mac Mini servers or seeing those go out the door, because for $1,000 you actually get the current version of server 10.6, mm-hmm. which is like a $500 software suite, I think.
Mm-hmm.
it provides all the user management stuff you need, along with some advanced things like hosting calendars and things like that, and it can be really useful. You always have to weigh what kind of environment you're going to be bringing it into,
right,
as far as for servers go. So Max can integrate pretty well with a Windows environment, and can integrate really well with a Linux environment. I use mine within the Novell environment here on campus. It's a hybrid of Novell, Windows, and stuff. But regardless, you can integrate them that way. The cool thing about server, at least when I was talking with people, is that it's the Mac OS X that you know and use, plus stuff. And then I think that's why Lion, it seems like they're going to be integrating it into just the base install of Lion, like maybe an add-on package or something that mm-hmm. you can just make into anything. Mm-hmm. But it's because it's not like an entirely different product. It's the same thing. So the same ideas that you have on how you're administering a server or how you're working with your desktop or laptop Mac, it translates over into working with the server product. But like everything else, it really is on a case-to-case basis, whether it fits within your network.
Right.
And the $1,000, I've always wanted to give myself a nice Mac Mini server to toy around with, because I think there's a podcast composer in there, and the calendar stuff is really what I'm used to, what I would like to use it for.
Right, right.
Just play around with that thing.
Mm-hmm. But. Maybe the last item that maybe we could touch on, so I'm just looking over our different categories here, is I'd like to pick your brains a little bit on AppleCare. I've heard a lot of, you know, pluses and minuses. Should you get it? Shouldn't you get it? Is it because of the level of service you maybe can get in an Apple store? Do you need it? And just maybe customer service levels in general. What's your advice there? Should you get AppleCare? And maybe I can't really ask Aaron because
I can definitely give my opinion on this one. I mean, this is not me speaking from an Apple standpoint. This is me speaking personally.
This is Aaron Spriggs, regular Joe. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I
mean, unplugged.
Fine. Let's say you're getting a MacBook Pro 15-inch. AppleCare for that is $350.
Mm-hmm.
Now, upfront, that sounds like a lot. But students get a discount on that. Businesses get a discount on that. If you're education through schools or anything, you get a discount on that.
Mm-hmm.
Even with just that $350, let's say you don't get any discount at all. Most repairs, I mean, that pretty much is the average price of repair, if not less.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to take it in once within that 3 years, and usually it pays for itself. Like, yeah. I see time and time again how it pays for itself. Even with something like an iPhone, there is no cheap iPhone fix. Usually it's, if you have to get a screen replaced, it's a pretty large amount, or the whole device is like buying the phone over again. Mm-hmm. And AppleCare covers stuff like that. For an iPhone, it's $70. And that does it multiple times, too. I mean, in my opinion, there's no reason not to get it.
Yeah, I can speak as a former genius that whenever we saw that they had AppleCare, like it was so nice, because we could essentially do whatever it took, as long as, I mean, you always have to give the disclaimers. If you drove it over with your truck,
mm-hmm.
if you spilled your bottle of water on it, I mean, stuff like that isn't going to be covered by AppleCare. But if you came in and your machine like died on you, having AppleCare, you can have the trust that they're gonna get it fixed.
Right.
Like, and even if it's $1,000 repair to get it all fixed, it'll be done. Like, and you're off the hook for it. And like Aaron said, any sort of even medium severity repair is going to be costing you between $300 and $400 because mm-hmm. of how machines are put together. They're so intricate. And the parts are so finely manufactured
mm-hmm.
that they're just not cheap.
Right.
Laptop parts are just not cheap. Like you said, the discounts make it really a no-brainer. And if you're going to keep a machine around for 3 years, which is how long AppleCare runs for traditionally. Now, I think schools can negotiate that longer if they're purchasing as a school. But if you're going to keep a machine around for 3 years, that's about $100 a year to have the peace of mind to know that if something happens to your machine, you'll be able to get it fixed within usually 3 to 5 days is what a repair would take us at the top end.
Right.
And it's peace of mind. I wouldn't purchase a machine without AppleCare unless it was used. If you're going to be buying the newest one every year, then you have a more difficult decision to make. But if you're going to keep something around for more than a year, it seems like a good idea to have that sort of coverage for yourself.
Because you get, out of the box, you get 1 year of basically AppleCare for free, right? And then when you can purchase AppleCare anytime within that year, is that how that works?
Mm-hmm.
And then that extends it for another 2 years, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, makes sense. All right, we should probably get along here. I know, Aaron, you got to run off to a final, which I want you to do well on. And let's move right into our picks of the week. We kind of queued Aaron and Bob up, and hopefully you were able to make a selection. Aaron, why don't we start with you? Do you have a pick of the week?
I do. It's an iPhone app.
Okay.
It's called TweetBot, like a robot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a newer one out there, actually. It's only been out for a little bit. They actually just had their 1.1 update, I think, last week. But the interface is just really slick in how it works. I haven't seen a Twitter app that actually works as well as this yet, where everything just feels right. Like I scroll down to refresh, or I scroll to the left on a tweet, I can see the entire conversation. If I swipe to the right on a tweet, I can see every at reply related to that tweet. If single tap, I can see all my options. If I double tap, it brings me to more information on the tweet. If I triple tap on it, I can automatically reply to it, and it's just like all sorts of stuff.
Everything right there.
TwitBit integration, YFrog, Bitly automatically truncates your information, automatic hashtagging, like everything. Like, I was using the Twitter app for a really long time, and this blows it out of the water.
This is iPhone, iPad as well?
Just iPhone, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's just iPhone.
Okay.
I think it was 99 cents for a while. It's around $1.99 right now. I think they're still saying it's on sale, but it's listed as $1.99 for some reason.
Very nice.
Actually do have a sneak drop-in recommendation, too, as well. If this is a Mac episode. If you're actually looking for a really good Mac podcast, there's a podcast that just started like a couple months ago called Minimal Mac. They had a website for a very long time, and they actually just started a podcast. It is a very minimal podcast. It's about 20 minutes long, really useful information, and it's usually business or school oriented too.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so it has a lot to do with how the Mac is integrated into that and kind of where they're going. I found that I think anybody listening to this podcast would probably really enjoy
that. So if you have time after listening to this podcast, you can head over to that one.
Keep Wells Tech first on your list.
Is that a weekly or daily, or what is it, Aaron?
Weekly, okay. Sometimes even more than weekly.
Okay.
They just kind of record whenever they feel like it, or if they record a 60-minute episode, they'll chop it up into 20-minute chunks and release it.
Okay. That's the word minimal. Okay. Cool. I'll have to check that out. I like it. Bob, do you have a pick?
I have. Could I do more than one, or is there?
Well, Aaron got in two, so you can do at least two.
Okay, so for the first one, I'm no big lover of Photoshop. I think it's very expensive.
It is, yes.
but that's right. So my first one is an image editor called Acorn, and you can find it actually through the Mac App Store. So if you have Mac OS X version 10.6. the newest version, you can get it right through the Mac App Store, which is really cool. And it's relatively inexpensive. I think it's like $40 or so. Image editor that does some of what Photoshop does, but not everything. It's just meant to be able to do just basic photo editing things. And it's a complete Mac program, so it runs pretty quick because it's built on top of the same libraries as everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing for me is it allows you to crop how I want to. So many times you have cropping is interesting on these programs, but this one allows you to actually explicitly set a preset or set a certain width and height and go ahead and crop it. And it's a cool app, and I like supporting independent software developers because they do a lot of really cool stuff, and a lot of times they don't get a lot of really cool money.
that the big guys do. So right. By, it's good to support them.
By Flying Meat Inc.
Yes.
I am looking at it now. They do have compatibility with Photoshop files. So in case you you receive those, it can load those, and it can also export images as layered Photoshop files. So
yeah, as a designer, I've used Acorn before, just kind of checking it out. I've used Pixelmator too, is another great one. Both of those can save out as PSD Photoshop files, and the interfaces are a lot easier to work with, especially if you're a beginner to a little more advanced photo editing. It's a really good app.
I'm going to have to try that. Acorn. And yet another one, Bob.
Another one. I'm just tossing it out there. As a web designer, I code everything by hand, and so I still use TextMate from Macromates. Mm-hmm. So if you go to macromates.com, I think it is. It's not the most updated text editor, but it's probably the most basic while providing advanced functionality if you want it. Mm-hmm. Great for coding up anything from just writing out a to-do list in a text file to coding an entire web application in Ruby on Rails or whatever framework you choose. It's very powerful, very fast, but also very clear and simple in what it does, and so I'd like to plug TextMate as well.
And we should probably say that you are now, I think, involved with the redesign and re-architecture of the MLC website, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. I was in, and the reason we came back, actually, is in January I came on as the school's webmaster, and I also do technician work around the campus. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing everything in, and so I spend a lot of my day in TextMate, and I've grown to love it as a son almost. It's,
so how is that project going? Is that something that's going to be released this summer or next fall? Or
the hope is to have something to be able to release by at the start of the school year.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And then it's the whole premise behind it is to get something released, and then we're going to be retooling it and reconfiguring it and redoing things as feedback comes in from that point forward. And so it's never really going to be done, but it's going to be released and then continually worked on throughout its life. And hopefully it has a long and very productive life. So that's the hope. And then could I do just one more?
Sure.
This one is specific to people who read a lot. And as pastors and teachers, you read a lot. And so instapaper.com is a web service that allows you to save links, and then it scrapes the web page and pulls it down and into a minimal reading environment. Website's really cool, and Marco Arment, the developer, is one of the nicest guys I know. He's really, really neat. Well, the cool thing is that then it syncs it to your iPad and your iPhone through applications, Instapaper applications, and makes reading those long-form websites that you find during the day really nice, because you can sit down on your couch and read it on your iPad. And I can't say enough good things about Instapaper. Marco's been great about handling any issues I've had in the past. Mm-hmm. And he has a podcast called Build and Analyze with 5x5 Network. And he's more than willing to share his experiences and his expertise with people, which is, I think, really cool. Yep. And so that'll be my last one.
Yep, I use Instapaper. Sally, that's another app you need to get on your list there for your new iPad.
Yeah, my list is growing, for sure.
That's a great tool. Sally, you have a pick, I'm sure.
I do. A quick pick, and it is the Pogo Sketch Stylus. As you mentioned, I made a list for my iPad, and I'm trying to, you know, rein myself in and not just get it all at once. I want to go slow and enjoy each app as I get it. And one of the first ones on my list
savor it, yes.
was an app called Penultimate, which I'd heard great things about. Penultimate is basically a writing page, a blank page for you to take notes on. And you can use your finger and write on the screen. And then you can actually email images of what you've written on the screen or PDF documents of what you've written on the screen. We played around with it. It's really great for doing quick little sketches or taking notes or whatever it might be. But I decided to order a stylus for writing on my screen instead of using my finger. I read great reviews about this Pogo Sketch Stylus. So I ordered one from the web, came in the mail last week, and great timing as my iPad arrived. And it is a really cool thing to be able to write on my screen with a stylus. It's a different feel, and I feel like I have a lot a little more control than writing with my finger. And I know there are other apps out there that'll take what you've written on your screen and turn it into text for you as well. So I'm still trying to figure out which one of those I want to buy. But just for interacting and being able to take notes on the fly and things like that, I thought this stylus would be a good investment. I think it was about $20. I got it from 101 Design. Yep. And we'll have a link in the show notes.
I am a Pogo stylus fan as well. I've got two of them, actually. So
is that right?
I do.
I got a nice silver one, Martin. I wonder what color you have.
We've had this conversation before, Sally. That's not really fair. But my initial Pogo stylus was green, which is my favorite color. I'm proud to say I also have a hot pink one. So.
Woohoo, Martin, hot pink, huh?
You won't lose that one.
That's exactly right. That was my thought process. Actually, it was the only one in the store. I was on the road down in St. Louis, and I forgot my stylus, and I needed one. So I went into an Apple store. They didn't have any on the whole wall. So I asked the manager, whoever was there, this was kind of late at night, too, they had any at all. And he said, oh, well, yeah, you're in luck. We have a hot pink one. So I said, I'll take it. And
this is your lucky day.
This is my lucky day. So
hey, just checking out their website. They also have another product called Fling. It says it's an analog joystick for iPad.
Yeah.
It's like it kind of suction cups to the screen, and you can have a little joystick or even one in each corner. So I'm not quite sure about that. Has anybody tried that?
I've seen those. I have not tried them.
Okay.
And I've seen now just recently they've got these little bolt-on or clip-on keyboards even that give you the tactile feel, you know, of a keyboard. So I'm thinking that that might be a positive too. So,
well, sorry guys to interrupt.
Okay, Aaron's got to go pass his finals. So
for sure,
blessings on that, Aaron.
Thank you very much for having me on. Well, it was a lot of fun.
Good to have you.
Thanks for joining us.
See you later.
Good luck,
thanks, guys. My pick of the week, and I'm very excited to announce that Wells
has
its first iPhone app in the iTunes Store.
Cool.
I was just, I've been working on this for a while, and there's a tool called App Maker that I was trying to tweak and make it do what we needed to do. So this app is called Wells Online, and it simply provides a view and the ability to play all of our podcasts that are online. So our daily devotion or Through the Bible, of course, the Wells Tech podcast. We have a military devotion. All the latest videos you can play that we have on Vimeo. You can read the daily devotion. We also have the Q&A on there, so you can read those. And the three-year Bible readings, so you can grab the latest reading, you know, on the go as well. And it got, I submitted this about a month ago. It was rejected the first try for I forget exactly the reason, but it had something to do with the length of the videos and how they're encoded. So we made some tweaks to that, and now I just learned last night that it was accepted. So go check it out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. But if you search for Wells on your iPhone or iPod Touch or iPad. Now, it's really configured for the iPhone, so it's not going to look real great on the iPad, but it should work. You should be able to see it. Now, you'll have to scroll down. If you do grab it, make sure you let us know what you think and write a review on iTunes, because that's what drives it up in the rankings, too. So it is, of course, free. And probably the first of a couple apps that I have in mind. Another one will be kind of a Wells Locator, Wells Yearbook kind of app where you can grab the Wells Yearbook online, see all pastors, teachers, and churches and their location, and maybe even plug that into kind of a geolocation kind of tool navigate to your local Wells Church. So that's in the future at some point. That'll take a little bit more coding than I have skills for right now, but we're working on it. So that is going to be my pick of the week, the Wells Online iPhone app.
And Martin, I decided last night when I got word that it was approved, was able to download it. You must have some friends at Apple, because they got this approved pretty quick for you and just in time for our All Things Apple show.
That's so right. I let them know, boy, if there's anything you can do. Now, they don't even give you a way to do that. So they march to the beat of their own drummer. So coincidence only. But I'm happy about that. So and hopefully it works well. Let's move on to, we skipped over our news and tech section, Sally. And there's a couple things there, at least one big announcement that is not necessarily Apple related, but I think is maybe some good news for schools. And that is that Google at their I.O. conference of last week announced the Chromebook. Bob, have you heard about the Chromebook?
I watched the keynote.
Ah, okay. So you got
here at work. I'm interested in what's going on over at the Googleplex.
Yeah. So. Basically, just for those people who don't know what the Chromebook is, it's a netbook or it's a laptop that really doesn't have much for internal storage, but it relies on the Chrome OS, which is essentially a Google browser, to access all your applications. So all of these applications are in the cloud. You need to be online to use it, and the Chromebook is kind of a low-cost, low-end notebook with an SSD drive, so it boots up within 5 or 6 seconds, and then you launch the browser, and then all your apps, whether it be Google Docs or Gmail or any of the other apps that are optimized for web use, are sitting there. And maybe the most exciting part about the announcement from my perspective was maybe for schools where they have kind of a rental or lease type program where you pay, I believe on the low end, $20 a month per laptop. Yeah. And yet I think you have to sign up for 3 years, but basically you pay them $20 a month. And then you get the use of the laptop. If it, there's something wrong with it, they'll replace it. So they actually maintain the hardware for you, and then obviously you get all the updates as as Chrome OS gets updated, and then at the end of the 3 years you get another one, and you can keep the cycle going. And you kind of have to do a cost benefit analysis, but in the end there may be some I think good things there for a school to consider if they're looking at maybe a one laptop per child kind of concept. You can lock it down as well, so you can say what kids can get at and what they can't, what apps they can use, what apps they can't. So I think there's some potential here. Bob, did you have any other thoughts on the whole Chromebook?
One thing to be aware of is that the updates are done automatically and they are rolled in just right while you're working. So it's not like OS X or Windows where you have to explicitly update something.
You get it whether you like it or not. Yeah.
So that is something to be aware of if you get one for yourself, is that whatever Google decides to do, Google's going to do and push to these anyway.
Right.
I think it's cool. The base underlying architecture is built on top of Linux.
Right.
And so that's considered a unique implementation of the Linux kernel, and then essentially a big browser after that.
Yep.
So.
Yep, sounds solid. They've been working on this for at least a year. I know I kicked the tires on Chrome OS about a year ago, and now they've kind of married this to hardware. And it'd be interesting to watch the progress of this.
I think it's June is when they're releasing the
yep.
first ones.
Yeah, June 15th. I think you can order them. You can order them if you're a school. You can do the $20 a month deal. And enterprises and businesses, I think it's about 28. Yeah, something like that, yep. If that fits in. And kind of the appeal is, low IT support costs potentially to do this. And then if you're a regular old user and want to try it, I think you can buy the notebooks for in the $400 range. There's a couple, one from Acer, one from, I believe it's Samsung. Yeah,
yep.
Samsung's the other one, so... Sally, let's move right into community feedback since we're running short on time here. Who'd we hear from this week?
First off, I wanted to make mention of Pastor Phil Huebner at Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida, just giving us a tech update on all that's going on down there. We've talked about Pastor Huebner and how actually 4 years ago he graduated from seminary, the same year as my husband, and was assigned to a new startup down in Palm Coast. And he wrote recently to tell us that obviously they've built a new church and school, and next year they plan to go through fourth grade with their school already and have about 200 students. And in the process, they've gone all Mac there at Christ the King in Palm Coast. He's looking forward to the Mac OS 10 Lion release so that he can make use of some of that server capability there as well. They are looking at live streaming their services soon, and they also are going with SnapGrades, which is one of the things that we've talked about here on the podcast in the past, for school management and online gradebook and things like that. There are some growing pains along the way, though, as you go through all of this process. In the past, Pastor Huebner has been uploading his sermons to Vimeo, one of our Wells Tech picks, and using that very successfully for posting his sermons after the service is over. But in transitioning to that live streaming, then he's kind of meeting with a dilemma, because the live stream recorded sermons aren't as high a quality as what you can record, say, with iMovie on a Mac. So I was just explaining to him recently that the way we have it structured here in Sleepy Eye, you have to have kind of two outputs to be able to do that kind of thing. So you maybe send one to a computer and record with iMovie and another to a computer and stream to the web. Like I said, growing pains along the way with all that growth, and would be very interested, Pastor Huebner, to keep up with what's going on there at Christ the King and see how things develop.
Yeah, with live stream, you can record and then you can also download the recording, so that may that may play into the, you know, the scenario there. But it's, you've got some options. And I don't know whether that's with the free version or just the premium version, but I'd have to check out. But I think you can do it either way. So it's a cool tool.
Speaking of live stream, you were at MLC this weekend, and we got some feedback. I had to chuckle a little. There was some kind of ground roots efforts to get Pound Call Day as a trending hashtag on Twitter. It didn't get real far, but
we got another shot at it this week, though.
That's right. We are going to be streaming live from the seminary graduation services on Thursday morning at 10, and no, I'm sorry, call services Thursday morning at 10 and graduation Friday morning at 10.
Right.
So
lots
of
we're doing
of
the concert
there
on Thursday night, and vicar call service on Tuesday night as well. So you that have Twitter accounts, Pound Call Day. Let's get it on the boards. So.
And there was also some discussion around the quality of that live stream effort from MLC. And Martin, from your perspective, managing it, it sounded like things went very well for you.
Yeah, it was sweet. It was, I think, much better than the previous service that we had, and all kinds of things that you can do with it, with lower thirds and the crawl at the bottom and playing filler. So we were running Wells Connections when the stream was not actually broadcasting anything live. So it's a good product, live stream is.
Additional feedback from Joshua Johnson, who's out at Nebraska Lutheran High School, and said that he was using live stream as well for their efforts out there, and it went well for them too. It sounds like there's a bit of a learning curve. He was trying to use it with Adobe Flash Encoder with their Procaster versus their Webcaster, and so there's some options there. I think it'll take a while for people to settle on the best way to use live stream, but it sounds like it's a very strong tool for
you. And MLC is now using live stream. They stream obviously their chapel services, but they're going to be streaming over live stream for their sporting events, and I know they actually used live stream for their concert last weekend. So I think it's a good technology.
I think we probably can store up the rest of this community feedback for next week.
Sure. We got lots of stuff to share, but we're running out of time. Bob, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
We'll have to do that again. And blessings on your work there at MLC and the new website and everything else that you do there. For everybody else, tune in next week. We have Gail Potratz coming on the show, and we're going to be talking about planning summer vacation. And we'll be looking at how teachers in particular can put together a schedule that's going to benefit, obviously, the next school year, and how technology can play a part in that. So tune in next week for that. Let's close the show with the music of Stephen Bautista, his song Suddenly from his album Abandon. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Much the same, I've wandered off and squandered. message of this song, that being by my father is where I belong. Once again.